closer.
In brightest day,
in blackest night.
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, to hear the lamentation of your women.
Yes, welcome to Comic Culture on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio and podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I am Walter Duralia, Overstreet Price Guide at Pfizer, and I forgot to mention that this is the podcast that champions the local comic book shop.
And I'm definitely Chris Owen, professor of comic history at Mohawk College, although it seems like Walt's not too sure what he is.
I am sure, Chris, and I'm also sure that we have two esteemed and distinguished guests here at the show, longtime show contributors and on-air talent, Marty Berthelmer and James Harris.
How's it going, guys?
It's a pleasure to be here, as usual.
Wonderful intros, yes.
Excellent.
Now, James Harris, I might add, James Harris has a company, Harris Installations. James, is there a plug? We'll give you a free plug here, Harris Installations. You do wood, right?
If you need wood, go to Harris.
I do install hardwood, yes.
Okay, good. So if you need hardwood installation...
Or laminate.
Give James a call.
All right, sounds good.
We won't give you his number. So.
Okay, you know what?
What about if you need a good-looking guy?
Then give James a call at Harris Installation.
No. Marty a call.
Give Marty a call.
Yeah. You'll put up my number, right, guys?
Yeah, we will. It's on the screen right now.
I think it's all over the bathroom walls back at the Honest Lawyer, too.
It needs to be somewhere, that's all.
Right. And, of course, Chris and I are not the droids you're looking for.
But we're far more entertaining than the Phantom Menace ever was. All right, well, listen, after that debauchery of an opening. We do have a quick announcement here. Last week, you and I were talking about the success of the Godzilla comic and how, you know, if comic book shops were able to buy 500 issues of a particular, the first issue of Godzilla, they had their storefront named on the comic book. Now, and of course, we talked about how Marvel was doing the same thing, but we thought that they were going to be a little lamer in that, you know, offering, and they were going to have like a back page or a particular panel in the issue. Well, it turns out they are actually going to do roughly the same thing. They're going to offer the full comic book store on the cover. As I read it here, it says, Marvel will produce comic shop variants of Amazing Spider-Man number 666 with covers showing a photo of the store being defended by Spider-Man on the front page of the Daily Bugle.
Right. Front cover art will be done by Humberto Ramos. And that ships July 27th. Now, I got a little bit of information because I know we screwed that up last week, Chris. It will be, I believe stores have to match their regular... I don't know. I'm not sure the formula, but they have to order a certain amount of regular Spider-Man. Let's say it's 100.
Right.
And as soon as they hit that plateau of, let's say it's 110% of the issue before, then they're allowed 500 variant.
Okay. Well, listen, we do apologize for the mix-up, but you know what? It just shows that, hey, we're human, too.
And we're not the droids you're looking for.
Exactly. All right. Let's continue on to New This Week. And, of course, we have our sponsor.
Yes, New This Week is brought to you by Remy Martin XO. Makes even the dullest podcasts seem brilliant.
Oh, well, that's great. How fitting.
Right.
Anyways, what do we got going for New This Week?
Chris, we're going to start with fitting. Speaking of fitting, speaking of segues.
Hey, I love these segues.
Amazing Spider-Man number 661.
661. Now, you know what? This is an interesting issue because I had a quick little gander at it. And this is really cool because, you know, I don't know if you, for some of our listeners, I don't know if they're aware, but there's something called the Avengers Academy where they have, like, you know, people with superpowers who are going to, basically going to school. To
young
learn
kids.
How to, young kids learning how to use their powers and
upstarts.
Abilities. Upstarts, if you will. Who are, you know, trying to figure out how to be a hero kind of thing. And so Spider-Man is actually going to be a guest lecturer at the Avengers Academy. And I thought this was pretty cool.
Wow, Chris. Like, I know you can relate because you lecture at Mohawk College.
Yes.
And you know what it's like to have these dregs in front of you that you know are going to amount to nothing, but you still have to put on a face and go out there and do the best you can.
Well, you know, you got to do what you got to do, right? You know, it's you got to be that mentor. You got to be that that person. And, you know, I don't want to say that they're all dregs.
Of course they're not. You know, of course, I'm just playing... devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Certainly everyone has some potential in them.
Absolutely. Of course they do.
Thanks, James.
Thank you, James. Everybody has potential, and everyone needs to find their place in society. And as a teacher, as a mentor, it's your job, it's your duty to try to mold these people and try to train them and educate them in the best way you can.
Right, right.
Yeah, and if they can't do what you're trying to teach them, they go into hardwood installation.
Oh, hey-o.
Wow. Oh. Zingers are flying.
Oh. That's
all right.
So or food service.
So Spider-Man's 661. You're right. And you know, being a Spidey fan all my life, and can you imagine this is going to be? I haven't read it yet. It just came out today. But this is going to be a comedy issue.
Yeah, you know what? Right? I took a look at it already. I did read it. It was pretty funny. It was fun.
Right.
Even at the very beginning, I don't want to give it too much away, but there's a guest appearance of one of the original Avengers is in there, and I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it's a really fun book to be. And actually, you know what? There's a lot of guest appearances now that I think about it. So check it out at number 661. You won't be disappointed.
Right. And on that same note, while I have it in my head here, that's Spider-Man, that free comic book day Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Dan Slott one. That was excellent. That was really, really, really well. It's kind of setting up the whole Spider Island and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But again, Spidey's the best when he's throwing the one-liners and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you know what? I really actually the writer of that particular book was Christos Gage, and he's really an up and coming writer to look for. He did a great Deadshot miniseries a few years back, and Deadshot is sort of one of the Batman Rogues Gallery kind of characters, and a really great writer. I highly recommend it.
All right. Chris, let's move over to DC Comics. DC Today is giving us, at your local comic book shop, The Gates of Gotham number 1.
Gates of Gotham number 1. Now, I did actually get another chance to read this one as well. And this is really interesting because this is sort of a look at instead of looking at the history just of the characters, they're looking at the history of the city this time. So they're looking at the history of Gotham itself, what has happened in the last couple hundred years that makes Gotham Gotham kind of thing. And it's a pretty cool book. And of course it has all the usual, you know, myriad of Batman type characters in it as well. And it's written by Scott Snyder and drawn by Kyle Higgins. And you know, it's so far from what I've read, it's a really good looking book.
Now Gotham, correct me if I'm wrong.
Gotham is where Batman resides.
Right, I know that.
Okay, just make it sure.
Gotham is New York City, really.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty much, right. Yeah.
Gotham is, because even New Yorkers call their city Gotham.
Right.
And so it's funny that DC, you're getting cities, whereas Marvel, you're getting, you know, okay,
yeah.
Spidey's in
but
New York City.
Is Gotham New York? Because I always thought that Metropolis was New York. And I always thought Metropolis was New York and like Chicago was Gotham.
Or Cleveland.
Well, Chicago's a little dirtier of a city. It's still beautiful, but it's still got a little bit different
grittier.
Of a feel. Grittier, yeah.
Couldn't Gotham City be Hamilton?
Yeah, it's not big enough.
We've got you two as heroes. Doesn't that fill the Batman and Robin role?
Oh, he's so cute, isn't he?
Oh, listen, you know what? Oh. He wants to be on every week.
I think he does, yeah.
Right.
But I always thought Chicago would have been Gotham.
Okay.
But, you know, I could be wrong.
Here's a trivia. Here's a test for the listeners out there. So on the DC universe there, what do you have? You have Metropolis. You have Gotham.
Yeah.
You have Central City, I believe,
that's
for the Flash.
For the Flash, yeah.
So what do these cities correspond to in the real world?
Yeah,
because I would imagine they're influenced by the real world, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So,
for sure.
Here, email us if you know the answer, please.
Yeah, you can email us at comicbookdaily.com where we host our podcast.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. All right, Chris, let's move it on.
We got one more.
Oh, I saw this and I got really excited.
I don't know why, but sure, go ahead.
Science Dog.
Okay, you know what? Science Dog, the only reason why...
You know about this?
Well, you know what? It's kind of one of those things. It started kind of as a lark, somebody mentioned it as an offhand at a comic convention, and now all of a sudden it's a comic. But you know what? Here's the thing. It is actually written by Robert Kirkman, who, of course, is the writer of Walking Dead.
Right, so you could pretty well... You know, Bat Dung. Guano.
Yes.
Written by Robert Kirkman.
Bat Guano, and we will publish it.
And we will publish it because Robert Kirkman
absolutely.
Is going to write
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely, that's
okay.
right.
Okay, so this is Image, right?
Yeah.
And he obviously writes for Image with his Walking
Dead.
Yeah,
and he's like one of the executive publishers.
And what's
there,
his other title? Untouchables? Or what's it called? Invincibles.
Invincible.
And so what? Science Dog. So it's a dog that is...
Don't try to read too much into it.
Okay. Right.
Just for fun.
Yeah. I understand. Yeah. Okay. So I won't try to dissect it.
It's a fun comic about a dog that's extra smart.
Right. Okay.
All right.
All right.
Let's just, you know what? That ends it for today's new releases. But you know what? There are far more many books out there to go out and check
far
out.
More many books far out more there. Many. I am telling you.
You know, it's amazing. I actually teach something. Anything.
In the English language.
All
yes,
right.
Please. So go out and support your local comic book shop today.
Okay.
Check out the new This Week rack.
Well, you know what? Let's just have a little bit of a segue into a little bit of the old Spider-Man animated series from the 1960s. The old Krantz animated series. Here we go. This is The Scarf.
Oh, yeah, Chris, if that doesn't want to make you jump on a Pan Am, put on a Speedo, and head out to Honolulu.
Absolutely.
No tune will.
Absolutely.
No
absolutely. Tune fantastic. Love tune. Love that stuff.
And as always, a great segue into industry news.
Yes.
And James Harris from Harris Installations is reading the sponsor this week.
All right.
Industry news is brought to you by Hennessy XO. It makes even the dullest podcast seem brilliant.
All right.
Okay.
Not so sure how I like that. But anyways, here we go with industry news.
We'll use somebody else for the next one.
Sure, why not?
Chris, no, this you'll understand this. Liberty Meadows.
Yes, Liberty Meadows by Frank Cho.
By Frank Cho.
You know what? It's a fantastic artist. I really loved Liberty Meadows for a long time there.
Issue 37 was the last issue that Frank Cho drew for Liberty Meadows. Now, of course, it started as a strip, and then...
It actually started in a strip in, like, the university newspaper that Frank Cho went to, and he kind of he kept on developing it, and he ended up having it published by Image Comics, and, of course, now he's, like, this mega comic superstar.
Right, and of course, Liberty Meadows is about sexual frustration.
Yeah,
right?
There's
Marty can relate to that.
Coke on you, 1, 2, 3, 4. No,
anyways, Liberty Meadows. It's basically about a animal sanctuary, and there's like a regular kind of doctor that runs sort of everything.
Veterinarian. Thank you.
And there's this hot chick that comes around, and of course he falls in love with her, but he's too shy. He doesn't know what to say.
And she likes him, and he likes her, but they never ever
they
hook
can't
up.
Say anything.
He's too shy, and it's always he'll walk in, and she's talking to some guy that she's trying to get rid of, but he'll walk in and think that she's in love with him, and then into depression for a month and that kind of stuff.
And there's all kinds of talking animals that
Bloom County-ish in that way.
Very Bloom County-ish in that way.
I'm going to concede to this one. Yeah, this is my life. This is what I live every day.
Good for you, Marty.
I feel
good
pathetic.
But anyways, interestingly enough, so for a long time, actually, I don't even know if you're a fan of Liberty Meadows, you might not even know what happened here, because all of a sudden, Liberty Meadows just sort of stopped, right? And the rights to Liberty Meadows was sold to Sony Digital.
Right.
Now, and what Frank Cho was going to do is there was going to be he sold the rights to Sony Digital so that there would be an animated series that you could download online, and it would be like this cartoon only for computers.
Right.
Well, then anyways...
To make a long story short,
they was going to go to TV because they really liked the idea, and then people got fired. The recession hit, rather. And then people got fired, people got let go, and all of a sudden now, because of not using the rights for a number of years, the rights have reverted back to Frank Cho. So now he's now in control of everything again, which is great news for Liberty Meadows fans.
Right. Now, Frank Cho, of course, he's a master, Chris. He's a master at the good girl art, the provocative.
Yes.
Nothing kind of sleazy at all, but just very suggestive and provocative. Very, very brilliant and a really, really talented artist. But you know, I'm reading this, and it says, you know, issue 38 of, because it stopped at 37 years ago, Liberty Meadows, the comic book, right? Issue 38 is going, he's starting up issue 38.
Right.
But you and I both know Frank Cho's work schedule. This guy cannot keep a monthly comic.
No, he can't.
They should go to like a web, strip. He should go back to strips.
He should go back to specials or something like that, where it's like he's going to publish a book once every year. It's going to be a great big to-do kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe like a graphic novel,
60 pages, rather than try to publish some sort of once-a-month thing, because there's no possible way he's going to come out with this once every month. The problem is he's too meticulous in his artwork. He's an excellent, fantastic artist. I mean, you know, yeah, his good girl stuff is good. However, his line work and his ability to draw the human form and animals and everything is absolutely phenomenal.
Right. So, I mean, listen, we're all glad that Frank now has kind of... Well, really, what this means is he has... he's won back artistic license for the property, which is great. So he can move it in whatever direction he wants. And Frank, if you're listening to the show, don't do a monthly because you suck at monthlies. And do something special with it. Do something, like Chris says, do a special, do some strips, do online stuff, do kind of three-panel gags that are done on those three panels.
What do you mean by if he's listening to the show? He's a regular listener, is he not?
I'm sure he is.
I'm sure he is. We do have a lot of industry people who listen to the show.
I assure you he's not.
You know what?
Birdie.
Just because you emulate what he's writing about doesn't mean that you're right about these things.
Man, talk about wound up. Punk.
I know. Holy cow.
All right, listen.
I've got pent-up frustration, guys.
Listen. Liberty Meadows, back in Frank's hand. Great news. Let's move on to Mighty Thor. Now, you guys, all three of you fine gentlemen have me at a disadvantage because all three of you have seen the Thor movie. Now, I do want to report to you stats that it won the week again as the biggest movie of the weekend last weekend with a $34.5 million gate in North America. That puts it at around 120 mil in North America, 120 plus mil worldwide, so it's like 250 now. It's a bona fide hit internationally, so they're probably going to do Thor again, but I have not seen the movie. I want you guys to chime in on how this movie was.
Go ahead, guys.
Well, you know what? For someone who can't say that they follow the Thor line to the T by any means, you know what? It was actually very entertaining. I think every theater is forced to make you watch it in 3D. So it's kind of got like the Avatar. No.
I actually saw it in 2D.
But oh, fine. Well, I saw it in 3D. It has a little bit of the Avatar effect because, I mean, you know, you're looking at all the mystical planes and all the otherworldly sort of locations. And you know what? They look great in 3D and everything. But for some of the fast action pace, some people, some of the audience members say that they lost a little bit of the action, that the 3D kind of took it away from the effect.
Right.
So I think it might also depend on in which format you saw the film. However, the film itself, I thought it was actually pretty good. It was entertaining. It had the funny moments when it needed it, and it didn't seem too cheesy. It didn't seem too corny like some of the previous Marvel movies may have.
James, what were your thoughts on the film?
I'd have to agree with Marty, to be honest. He kind of jumped ahead of me there because I'm leading the no 3D revolution.
Right.
Where I think we should completely stop attending movies in 3D until they make them so we don't have to wear cheesy glasses.
Right. Unless there's some sort of adult films. Those 3D ones aren't bad.
I still prefer to watch those in the comfort of my own home.
Right. Oh, sorry.
But you mean not in the theater where everybody can see everything?
I'm no Pee Wee Herman.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
But on the same line, the movie itself, I thought the actors did a great job portraying their roles. I thought it was funny when it needed to be funny, full of action when it needed to be.
Yeah.
And it was actually really in-depth. I felt you were drawn into the characters more than some movies have done, so I feel they did a great job with the movie.
Yeah.
And I would probably see it again in 2D.
Yeah, you know what? I saw it in 2D. I thought it was phenomenal. I thought it was very, very extremely well done to begin with, but I also thought it was very true to the comic book. I thought for people that didn't know anything about the characters, I thought they did a great job of getting everybody up to speed in a really quick way so that you could feel for the characters, you knew who the characters were, and you could know what they're all about. I thought the action sequences were great. In fact, I thought they were so great, I thought there wasn't enough of them, and I thought it wasn't long enough in some scenes. I thought Chris Hemsworth was fantastic as Thor. You know, he really was did a great job at portraying the God of Thunder. And you know what? Kudos to Kenneth Branagh for doing such a great job.
Right. Now, this Loki guy.
Loki.
Or Loki.
Loki. Now, there's rumor that he's going to be the main villain in the Avengers movie.
Well, you know.
Now, is he good enough? Can he carry that weight?
He was very good in the movie. And, you know, as far as rumors go in the Avengers movie, I don't want to say too much, but I will say that if you didn't stay till after the end of the credits of the Thor movie, you missed something. So, did you guys get a chance to see that?
Yes. I felt like it definitely lends very directly to what the Avengers movie may be about.
At the end of the movie, I ripped up my 3D glasses, so I watched the preview in blurry vision and felt ill.
Well,
good, I'm glad.
But all the hype, all the pros out of the way, I will say that there was maybe one con to this movie, and that is the fact that they're trying to squish as many comic books as Thor is long into a two-hour movie, and so I felt that, say, the pivotal character change in someone like Thor, it occurred within 10 seconds.
Right,
so
right.
You go from a very strong...
Yeah, but any, I mean, even any book adaptation, Marty, right? Even any, you got to kind of condense it and I don't know. I mean, you may have a point.
Look, we're fanboys. Quit arguing.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Can't you see we are the most correct and to the T people in the world? Thank you.
Thank you. Put that puppet away. All right. Listen, what's great, though, is, you know, Thor, fanboys of Marvel, especially Thor. How do you do Thor? Like, how do you do Thor?
Yeah.
Thor is kind of, you know, second, third stringer, but like a hardcore Marvel fanboy type of guy. But how do you transfer Thor into the masses? And from the sound of it, you guys look like Marvel did it well.
Yeah, they did it extremely well, I thought.
All right,
and
good.
I mean, I know the character probably better than everybody here at this table, but anyways.
Whoa. Those are personal attacks.
How many Thor comics have you guys all read?
Like, between us?
Probably, what, three?
Six.
Six? Okay, yeah, I read more than you.
Thousand?
Anyways, I'm just saying.
I've been in the basement at Big B Comics reading through their Thor comic books.
Magazines.
Magazines, yeah. Comic books, newsreels. Whatever format he's in, I'm taking it in.
Oh, boy, that just proves my point. Anyways, let's keep moving on.
All right, let's move it on. Chris, speaking of comic book movies, I like how we tie these things
in.
Yes,
we're very good at that.
Yeah, we are good at that. Tintin. The huge, how do you say the Herge? Is it Herge?
That's how I always say it.
Herve Villechaize.
Well, it's definitely not Herve Villechaize. It's not Tattoo.
Oh.
Herge.
The plane, boss, the plane. Herge. Well, anyway, Tintin, of course, very, very, you know, I mean, outside of North America, massive
yes,
appeal
definitely
worldwide.
In Europe and everything.
Europe,
yes,
Africa, Asia. Yeah. So there is a movie teaser, like a trailer posted today yesterday on the internet. And first of all, I have to claim a little bit of ignorance. I did not know it was going to be like a non-real people type of thing. What do you call those?
Non-real people.
Non-real people.
We've just been doused by Chris's first drink of the evening.
No. So to keep this straight, they use fake people. No. So this is a finger puppet movie.
No, it's like the Vomit and Grommet ones. What do you call it?
Wallace and Grommet. No, I like
Vomit and Grommet.
I like Vomit and Grommet.
We've completely derailed.
No, it's the motion capture stuff.
Boy.
It's the...
Like claymation sort of
nah,
thing?
No, I don't. You know what? Forget it. It's like an animation.
It's everything we haven't guessed yet?
It's animated. Is that what you want to say?
No, it's not animated. It's kind of like... it's a half between animated and real people. It's like... oh, cripe here. Help me out here.
It's CG, computer generated.
Anyway.
It's kind of like Avatar, where they weren't really... They were animated, but they weren't really...
Sure. Let's leave it at that.
All right.
Could we maybe revisit this next week when we have our ideas collected?
When we correct ourselves, we'll open the show with a correction.
All right.
I saw the trailer and today and I, this morning, and I really liked it. Steven Spielberg. This is kind of a very 30s feel to it, like that whole kind of capers type stuff. And Steven Spielberg did a great, great job with Raiders of the Lost Ark.
With that whole feel of that era, for sure,
right?
For sure.
So I'm hoping that comes across in this movie too.
I don't know about the era, but what he managed to do, he managed to bring back a feel of the news of not the newsreels, but of the
cereals.
Yeah. Yes, of the 30s and the 40s, and he was able to bring that back in sort of an updated version. And is that what you're basically saying?
Yeah, I am. Thanks, Chris. Okay.
Well,
thanks for articulating
I'm
that.
That's what I'm here for.
But you know what? In the U.S., in the last, 10 years or 8 years or whatever, the comic book craze turning into movies has just gone crazy,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
And here you go now, the European properties are, you got Tintin, Dylan Dog, which just bombed.
It was terrible.
Ago,
you know,
right?
It didn't even make $1 million its opening weekend.
I know. But see, it was an Italian comic property.
Yeah.
It's the European property.
Nobody
now.
Cares about Italian comic
apparently
properties.
Apparently not. But I mean, Asterix Obelix now, the French versions have been made. I'm just wondering, because of all this money being thrown at all these properties, will they make like an international version of Asterix Obelix, one in English?
I would doubt it. I don't think it's well known enough that people in North America.
Oh, I disagree with you.
Not in North America. I think you know. I understand that, you know, it was one of those things where, as a kid, I'd go to the library, I'd look up comic books because I was a nerd, and you know, basically the only thing I could find was like Asterix and Obelix. But you know what? If I could find anything else, but I would always go back to that.
Right. I understand. All right. Do you remember that German comic? I think it was German or Norwegian or Danish.
Black. Something like that.
Black.
Black?
Black. I was like a little kid, and I always remember the one cover, and it's always, you can if you go online and you Google maybe provocative covers or something like that, Black, he'd be hammering a guy in the head with a huge sausage, right? But he'd have it in a position where it looked like it was his penis, you know what I'm saying? No, I'm serious, and it's like a very famous cover,
okay.
But it's a very famous character, I guess, from that northern Europe. I'm not sure the country, I'm going to say Germany, but okay. We need a Black movie, is my point.
I think there are
some guy hammering guy in the face with sausage.
You know, you can order those, you know, in the comfort of your own home.
Oh, right, like, there are already
the movie network, and you know,
okay.
There's even stores for that kind of thing.
I am slow.
Anyways,
let's move it along.
Yes,
Flashpoint number 5. Flashpoint, of course, is this huge DC crossover event that I know nothing about.
Well, you know what? I read the first issue of Flashpoint, and basically it seems like there's sort of a little bit of a revision of history going on, but the Flash is still Barry Allen, and he's not too sure what's going on because he still remembers everything, but it seems like everything around what's going on in his life is different. Like, so for example, Iris, his wife, Iris, is she doesn't know who Barry Allen is.
Iris Flash?
Iris Flash. Iris Allen, I guess.
Right, okay, I'm sorry.
You know, doesn't really know who he is, and there's different, a different person as Batman. I don't want to give too much away here, but anyways, things are just different in the DC universe.
Right. So, but the interesting part about Flashpoint number 5, may end up being one of the most important DC comic books ever published.
Yes.
August is a 5 Wednesday month.
Okay.
Now, if you're in the comic book industry, they schedule comics monthly, and these 5 Wednesdays means 5 shipments, and they're kind of, the industry's geared toward 4.
Right.
So you have to come up with
a week where it might be a little bit weaker than other ones.
DC plans to only ship Flashpoint number 5 the last week of August. That's the only comic coming from DC.
So rather than have, like, you know, 5 or 6 or 10 titles from DC, they're only having one.
Flashpoint number 5 is coming out whatever that August is. August 31st, actually.
Yep.
And so the talk is, when I'm going online, I'm looking around, and everybody's seeing that when you look at it, actually, Bleeding Cool, which is a great, great website, they're talking about how all the DC titles
are going to be affected.
Are kind of coming to a close. For before this Flashpoint number 5. So when you look at it, and the news is that come September, apparently, DC is relaunching every title into number 1.
Right. So this is going to be, you know, all of a sudden now you've got Action Comics number 1, Detective Comics number 1. So Flashpoint number 5 is now going to be this sort of kickoff to having every single issue in the DC universe, supposedly, is going to revert to being number 1. It's going to be a jump start for every single other issue.
Guys, I swear to God, that's what I just said.
I'm just reiterating.
Oh, okay, you're reiterating. Okay.
That's good radio.
Right. But the thing I don't get is, I mean, of course I get it, right? But I mean, we've seen this at Marvel. I mean, guys, Detective just hit 900, Action just hit 900. Detective's just about to hit 900.
Yeah.
Can it be possible that they're going to go back and put Detective Comics at number 1?
What they'll probably do is what Marvel always seems to do, is they'll go back for a little while, and then when it's convenient for them, they'll go back to the original numbering, including all the ones that they started out with the number 1 as. So, you know, if they rebooted at number 1 and then went 20 issues, well, they'll just restart it again 20 issues later.
Right, because Detective at 881 right now, or soon. But what's interesting, I guess, is now the way I'm reading this is that this has been in the works for a long, long time. Because you name it, go to bleedingcool.com, check the article out. You have every single title that DC is publishing. The story arcs are coming to a conclusion in the end of August.
Yeah, I mean, even for an example, if you go to Bleeding Cool, like one of the write-ups here, it says, in Action Comics number 1, it says, now it all comes down to a weekend Superman versus the monster known as Doomslayer in this, the epic final battle of the reign of the Doomsdays. So you know what? Every issue of the DC Universe, it seems, is going to come to an end, and then they're going to relaunch it all as number 1.
All their arcs are ending at the same time.
Yeah.
So what does that mean for the DCU?
Now, here's what I think. I mean, you know what? as a comic collector, as somebody who just comes in off the street, you know, it's always very daunting to want to get involved in comics when you see an issue like, you know, hey, I really like Superman, but man, it's up to issue, you know, 904. I'm not going to be able to go back and read all the 900 comics before that. So, you know, forget it. I'm not even going to bother, right? How do you jump on to these titles, these characters that you like, when these number this numbering system is so daunting?
Yeah, I totally agree. For, say, someone who's young, say, you know, you get a kid 14, 15, you know, say he's got $10 a week to spend on comic books or whatever he wants to spend money. He probably wants to get into something that he's regularly going to buy. And, I mean, he might not want to start in the middle of something. He may want to actually pick and choose, say, a Superman spinoff or a Spider-Man spinoff because they all hold several, you know, titles. They might want to pick a less good title just because it's at the beginning. Like, they might not know any better.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, to see something reset to number one, but that is actually, you know, very popular, say Action Comics, because it's made its way to 900. They may want to actually reinvest in that, just because it started at number one. It's a new sort of takeoff.
Okay, well, this may tie into the story we'll get to a little bit later about you know, comic sales, but I think maybe a lot has to do with it. It's written by Jeff Johns. This number, what is it? Number
Flashpoint,
five.
Yeah,
number five. Now, the thing that struck me a little bit was that, okay, you have these guys like Jeff Johns, Brian Michael Bendis, maybe Grant Morrison, maybe Ed Brubaker. Guys like this aren't content with just working for DC. These are big, big fanboys. And I'm getting the impression that these guys want to leave some sort of legacy.
They want to
change the whole flipping DC
for
universe,
sure.
Reboot the whole flipping thing to their kind of perspective.
Yep.
Because they're now like the main writers and they have, you know, the powers to be.
They're creative directors now.
Yeah.
And they're
saying, okay, go ahead, right? And this is like, I won't say the word dangerous. Obviously, it's not dangerous. But this is like, for DC, it sounds like, you know, wiping the slate clean.
Well, I mean, obviously, we'll certainly find out come September what it's going to be like. But I can't say as I blame them, because you know what? It's awfully hard to get involved into a comic that's already at issue 900. I mean, as I said before, how do you get interested in something that's been around for so long? Now, you know, If I was 10 years old, or if I was a little bit younger, all of a sudden, I've got some extra money, and how am I going to go and pick a comic that, you know, is interesting to me? Well, I'm going to pick up something that's number one as opposed to something that's 900. So is this DC telling these guys to do this, or is it these guys telling DC that they want to revamp the world? Now, James, now you're sort of a, you know, quasi comic book guy. You buy things that you like, but you don't buy everything. What do you think of all this?
To be honest, I was thinking of the other side of that coin. I personally thought, man, would it be cool to see Action Comics go to issue 1,000?
Right.
And be able to see what kind of spectacular thing they do with that, and maybe make an amazing collection out of that. Like,
right.
An item that everyone would want.
So is that something that you think that you would probably buy? Or?
I think I probably would. Like, an issue like that.
Landmark issue, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you've got 1,000 issues behind that. That's something I'd probably want to collect.
But won't all these number ones now be landmark issues?
And you know what? There's too many number ones for it to be considered. The roadway to here is polluted with failed number ones. But there are short of Four Color, which really doesn't count.
Right.
Which was an anthology series. There has been no title that's reached 1,000 issues. So Detective and Action had something special going there in terms of they're like, you know, the Days of Our Lives or whatever that was, you know, the longest. Whatever.
And just like a lot of those soap operas, they're all being canceled.
I understand. Yes, yeah. I do. All right. Well, the times, they are a changing. You know, interesting days coming ahead for DC. It's going to be very interesting to see where they all go with this. All right, Chris, we have, what are we going to do?
We're going to do a little bit of a musical interlude here. We've got the Superhero Squad, for those of you who aren't too sure.
Ooh la la.
Yeah, I thought you might like that, but here you go.
Infinity Sword, I will rule the earth! All right, squaddies, time to hero up!
Hero, 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 hero
right. Well, that was, of course, the Superhero Squad, and that was our. That brings us to our next segment, which is brought to you by Courvoisier. It makes even the dullest podcasts seem brilliant. So, anyways, we're going to keep on going here with some of the issues here on comics and the industry news, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the comic book sales decline, how it slows in April. April saw the first appearance of Fear itself. However, that was part of the you know, the Thor and everything coming along, and
the whole big Marvel
relaunch. The big push.
Yeah. What's that called? What are those big projects called? The Marvel crossover events.
Yeah.
You're right, Chris. It helped shore up April.
Yeah.
But we still have April over April figures of comics being down just under 2%, and trade paperbacks being down just under 1%. So it's kind of stabilized April over April from last year to this year,
which is
good news, right?
Right. Well, you know what? Okay, so here we go. We have the Thor movie coming out, which obviously would help, you know, comic generating sales. Pardon me. I'm wondering how many would comic sales really be lagging if it wasn't for these giant movies coming out and comic book movies, or would they just sort of, you know, would comics try to find something better to publish? Would they not worry about these giant crossover events? Have they become stagnant in, you know, hey, we have to have these crossover events in order to make money, or is it just a lack of imagination and a lack of new stuff coming out?
You know, you postulate, or is it pose?
Postulate?
Postulate.
I think it's postulate.
A good question. And that is that, you know, I guess say back in the day, right?
Yeah.
If you really love comic properties, if you really love comic content, the only place you can get it, if you want your Thor fix,
yeah,
the only place you can get it is in the comic book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you may have a point now, okay, yeah, I really love Thor, but I'm getting my Thor fix through Thor movies,
right?
Through Thor video games,
right?
Through, you know, Thor head busts,
yeah.
You know that kind
t-shirts
of
and
t-shirts,
action figures. Yeah.
So you're getting your Thor without actually reading, you know,
but
the source material.
To read Thor, yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, I'm just wondering, would sales really be declining without these giant movies and things coming out, or would they just sort of stay the same, or is it just that the industry is getting so stagnant with ideas that they have to keep on doing all these giant crossover events, and people are getting sick of them, which is one of the reasons why sales are declining?
You know what? Good question. You'd think, though, right? I mean, the obvious thing, if you talk to a guy off the street or off of Bay Street or Wall Street and told the guy, hey, listen, I got this business called comic books.
Yeah.
And my sales were, you know, $100,000 a month. But guess what? All these video game companies and all these movie companies are making games and movies out of it. What do you think my sales are going to be? Oh, God, you got to be double that.
For sure.
Well, no, they're actually falling.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
There's something wrong with the industry right now, I think. I think that maybe people are getting tired of the giant crossovers. You know,
they're getting tired, Chris.
They're just getting tired. You know what? I went ahead and I read, you know, Flashpoint number one, and I was confused by what was going on. You know, I still read comics all the time, but you know what? It seems like these writers try to write comics as if they're trying to make a point, they're trying to say something, and I don't know. It's just they're not writing for the fans. They're writing to see how well they can write for themselves.
Right. They love the sound of their own voice, Chris.
Yeah.
Right. Now, Fear itself, you're right. It hit 128,000 copies in sales, which now any kind of comic that month that cracks 100,000 in sales, which in the 60s would have got you canceled.
Yeah, for
right?
sure, yeah.
Now is the big hit of that month.
Yeah.
Right? And, excuse me, Thor, the Mighty Thor number one, I'm sure writing the popular, the movie is at 82,000 and it's at number two.
Yeah.
And then you have a whole bunch of DC and Marvel properties.
Okay,
after
so,
that,
but, you know. I see X-Men isn't even on that list there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Times have changed.
Yeah, times have changed. You know, I remember back in the day, X-Men used to always top like 125, 200,000 copies. And now it seems like what they're doing is there's no... they're losing fans because they're spreading themselves too thin, and fans keep on saying to themselves, well, you know what? You know, I used to love buying X-Men, but I don't want to buy four different copies of X-Men.
Right.
So, you know what? I'm not going to buy any now.
Right. And New Mutants, X-Force, X-Factor, X-Men,
yeah.
New X-Men, Astonishing X-Men.
All
blah, blah,
that
X-Men.
Stuff. Whereas they used to have one that would sell, you know, 100,000 to 220,000.
Right.
And now it's less than that.
But the whole thing is changing, too. Like, if you'd have asked me 5 years ago and perhaps the 20 years before that, that you know, will a Green Lantern title ever sell more than a Batman title? You would have said
you're crazy.
Yeah, you're nuts.
Fair enough.
The last couple of years, you know, Green Lantern has been top five, and Batman has not been top five.
But here's the thing. I think that one of the reasons why that's happening is that there's so many stories have been told about Batman and Superman. I mean, here's characters that have been around for 70 years that, you know, how many more stories can you tell about these characters?
Now, but you may have a point there, too, on what you said about a couple minutes ago in the sense with the X-Men, right?
Yeah.
Batman has 78, I believe, maybe 93 monthly titles
I think,
going
roughly,
right now,
yeah.
Right. Whereas Green Lantern has two.
Right.
Right? So you have a fan base. That's a limited amount of money, and so and they're well written, well drawn. You know, Geoff Johns.
Yep.
So you get Green Lantern selling really well, but I mean, obviously Batman as a whole outsells Green Lantern fourfold.
Well, sure,
but it's divided up into seven or eight different monthly titles,
million titles,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, you may have a point there. I mean, but
This is my point. So. You know, Green Lantern, Blackest Night sells all these different comics because, you know, all of a sudden now you get the average comic book buyer. He's like, hey, this is a crossover event, but it's one title, right? I can buy that and I don't have to worry about buying 18 billion other crossovers to it. I mean, granted, Blackest Night did have that, but you know what? I don't know what I'm even trying to say anymore. I'm just saying that. Something needs to happen where they need to focus more on the writing.
Fair
and
enough.
Not
you know what?
Crossovers.
You have a point. It seems like the wellspring of the whole industry, which is the monthly title.
Yes,
and not just of the whole industry, but maybe I'm going to dare to say I'm daring to say it. The wellspring.
Wasn't he?
The G-string.
He was in the Thor movie. I think.
You're right. Yeah. The wellspring of much of pop culture today has been the monthly comic.
For sure, absolutely.
And yet it is the weakest link in all of those things. The sales are declining. It seems to be on the cusp of oblivion, really, which is odd because everything around it is prospering.
Yep.
Right.
And like, go ahead.
Oh, no, so I was just going to reiterate and summarize in your five-minute argument there that you know what, you may be right, and that comics may need to head towards focusing more on fewer titles, better artistry for every title that they do have,
right.
Better writing for the, and you know what, don't try and print money by making infinite different titles. Try and just focus on the two or one even that is very well done,
yeah,
and just have your very diehard followers for those few.
Yeah, I agree.
Well said, Marty.
All right,
but on that same note, graphic novels. Okay, when we talk about comic sales, we always mention graphic novel sales. And what I found interesting in the top five in April was of the five, the top three had nothing to do with your classic cape superheroes.
Right.
I mean,
right.
The one was a superhero, but it was like a parody or whatever it was, or
okay.
A couple of them were like Fables, Boys, and Invincible. Now,
right.
I know Boys and Invincible are super, but they're not your
standard classic
Batman, Superman, Spider-Man type thing.
They're
things that the monthlies, you know, don't make the top 50.
Right.
And then you have Green Lantern and Flash, which I think have a lot to do with Geoff Johns.
For sure.
Right. And within those top five, too, you don't see Marvel at all in there.
Yeah, and you know what? This is sad because... Really, with all the hype, with the Thor movie coming out, with the Captain America movie coming out, there should be at least a Marvel title in there somewhere.
Right. There should be a Marvel graphic novel in the top five.
Yeah.
But obviously, they're not doing their job. But
no.
Anyway, we're going to move on, Chris. We want to talk about... Chris, I know you're in mourning a little bit.
I am?
You are. NBC, this is kind of a week-old story,
yeah.
but you sent this link to me. They dumped Wonder Woman.
I know. It's it, you know, it is sad, but at the same time, I don't know how... upset I really am about it, because...
Did that even see the air?
No. And they started making a pilot for it, or a first episode or something, and it was already canceled. And now, you've got an interesting point about this, is what it was canceled for was, or something that's still alive here. Well, hold on, where was it now? The Kathy Bates' TV show... Harry's Law is still around.
And, right. And yet, so they didn't cancel Harry's Law to put in Wonder Woman.
So, yeah.
They decided to go with like a underperforming series like Harry's Law.
Yes.
Because it's not going to cost them any more money
right.
and that kind of stuff. And obviously, when I read that, I mean, we're looking around us and we're seeing the success that the comic book properties are having everywhere.
Yeah.
And, I mean, even Walking Dead, which is a comic book property,
yep.
Thor right but, now and stuff. I think they made a mistake. NBC made a mistake here not going to Wonder Woman.
I agree. But I think they also made a mistake in the casting. I saw images of who this Adrian Barnacki or whatever her name is. Palacki. Palicki, whatever her name is.
Palicki. Let's call the whole thing off.
But you know what? I wasn't really too keen on the casting. I didn't think the costume was all that great. I don't know. There was just something wrong about it. So I'm not terribly distraught about the fact that they're not making this show.
Well, I'm glad you're not terribly distraught. But what I'm reading is these bunch of guys, I guess, or somebody, some bunch of people, saw this pilot. And they weren't impressed by it. So based on that pilot, them not being impressed by it, they decided to cancel the whole thing. Now, of course,
right.
You and I know, you and I, as astute and you know, very, very on the ball news reporters.
That's what we are.
Have been covering that Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark thing.
Yes.
And they've been rebooting that for 17 years. and it's a work in progress. And, okay, the first... One didn't fly, but they went back to the drawing board.
45 ones didn't fly.
You know, and obviously, yeah, okay, you put the pilot on or you show a bunch of guys at Wonder Woman screening, the first thing that they have, and they go, yeah, okay, it's not working here, but it's such a great property.
Yeah.
Let's go back and tweak it a little bit.
You know what? It's short-minded in their sight because really short-sighted. Short-sighted.
No, in their mind?
Or short-minded. Whatever. You know, it's all good.
Yeah.
It's short-sighted in their mind because they really should have... followed through with something, but you know, as I said before, I was never really keen on the casting decisions.
Yeah, you know what I think? I think they're saving it for a big movie announcement.
Oh, maybe. But you know what? Speaking of TV series, you know, one TV series that is coming back and is going to be having lots of energy around it is Seth MacFarlane is bringing back the Flintstones.
Get out!
To Fox Television. Now, of course, this is almost like 50 years after its debut back in the 60s. And it was, of course, the first adult-themed TV series.
Yes, it was.
Animated TV
animated
series.
TV
yeah.
series,
and
yes.
I think...
Wilma!
Wilma! With eyes as black as frying pans.
Yes.
I love Freddie's old poems.
You stupid good looking.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway. You know, it turns out that Seth MacFarlane, the man who brought us Family Guy and The Cleveland Show and American Dad, he has now gone off and he's going to be the co-creator, along with the guy that did the Gilmore Girls TV series. The two of them have come together and they're going to make the new Flintstones cartoon series.
Isn't that amazing how things have come full circle? So you have the Flintstones, which I won't say, well, indirectly, but probably inspired The Simpsons,
yeah.
which inspired Family Guy,
yeah, for
which
sure.
inspired the Flintstones.
And, well, and you know, even Seth MacFarlane himself has said that the first cartoon character he ever drew was Fred Flintstone.
Right.
And so even for himself, this is coming back full circle. And you know what? I think it could be a really great show. I think they can make it really, really witty, really clever, and you know, really having a little bit of hearkening back to the old days of the Flintstones, but at the same time, updating it.
I don't think you can underemphasize the importance of the Flintstones cartoon or TV show to kids growing up in
no.
the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree.
I mean, that was your staple. You got home. You went home for lunch from school.
Yep.
You watched the Flintstones. You got home from at 3:30 or whatever. You watched the Flintstones.
I can't tell you how many episodes of the Flintstones I watched at 12 o'clock every day.
Right on.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, we're going to have a quick musical interlude here. Here is a little bit of the old Thor from the animated cartoon series from the 1960s.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the blooming heaven
right. Well, how'd you like that? That was
wow, a little quick. I love those epics.
Little
Chris.
Quick epic theme epics. Song there for
it's like
you.
A Rush thing from 2112.
All right. Well, listen, we're running out of time here, but very quickly, we haven't done our previews pick of the month yet, and so I thought we would pass around the old previews catalog and let us know what each of us like.
Of course, Chris and I do on the show a monthly feature called the Previews Picks, where Previews, of course, is the catalog available at your local comic book store, where you order things from Diamond Comic Distributors through your local comic book shop, and I have in my hand the May 2011 previews catalog, and I personally love. Hold on, I'm leafing to it as we speak. Oh, page 400, the Asterix and the Magic Potion mini bust. Now here's a mini bust. First of all, I love Asterix Obelix, and here's Asterix having a swig out of the magic green magic potion bottle.
Sounds like you two.
Hey-o.
And he's wiping his mustache after that nice swig. Of course, Obelix, as we both know, or everybody should know, he doesn't need to swig it because when he was a kid, he fell into the cauldron of magic potions.
Oh, right,
so he's forever strong.
Right. Okay,
so that's my pick. Page 400 of the May previews catalog, the Asterix Magic Potion Mini Bust.
All right. Well, listen. We're going to pass it on over to James now to see what his pick of the month is.
That's fantastic, Chris. I couldn't be more than happy to bring you my pick here. I've gone through the catalog here, and I found a real treat for everyone.
Oh, a treat.
If you turn to page 433, you see on the bottom left corner some Leonard Skinner Rebel Eagle folding knife box set.
Oh, wow.
Hold on. What was that again? Leonard Skinner?
Leonard Skinner, yeah. And I thought to myself, wow, if you really want to stab someone with an obscure band that no one cares about, this is your pick.
Oh, come on. Play some Skinner.
I'll be honest with you, I can't.
Listen.
But now, Madout, wait, we're not done. Oh. If you go down to the next headline, you see Leonard Skinner Trailwind folding knives with Leonard Skinner misspelled. So even the band can't spell their own name when they're putting it on a knife.
Good.
Nice. Work. That's awesome. That's
very
great.
Good. That's a all good right. pick. I like that. I might check that out, actually.
I'm actually going to buy four or five
for,
of them.
For all yeah. you knife well, enthusiasts.
You know what? For camping and stuff, it's perfect.
Yeah, and you want to rock out to Skinner while you're camping.
Wow, you got rednecks beside you. You make friends.
This is a terrible idea all around.
Right. All right.
All right. Well,
Marty Berthelmer now leafing through the catalog feverishly.
Feverishly. What have you got,
feverishly.
Marty?
Feverishly. All right, well, what I've come across is something that touches very close to home. It's actually The Hangover. It's Alan with Baby plush doll. So what we're looking at was we're actually looking at a plush doll with hair absolutely surrounding the entire head. It looks like a mini gremlin plush doll, to be honest with you, with a baby attached to the front. The baby, it couldn't look more ecstatic. It actually looks like a South Park character if you look at it. This is on page 431, by the way, right in the middle of the page.
Of the May previews catalog, of course.
Right. The same one we've all been talking about, yes.
Right. Excellent.
And so it's just very relevant because we have the second Hangover movie coming out very shortly during this summer. And you know what? If you haven't seen the movie, this is actually a great take. It's just a great image to see Alan with a full beard looking like a gremlin with the plush baby.
Pretty well, you don't have to see the movie if you buy this thing, right?
It sums it up. It right. sums up okay. what the movie's about.
All right. Well, listen, finally, as my pick, on page 384 of the May Previews catalog.
Thanks, Chris.
Sorry, I'm even wrong about that. 385.
385,
we have the Mr. Potato Head Three Stooges collector set.
Oh, how cool is that?
So the Three Stooges, Larry, Curly, and Moe, have entertained a generation with their slapstick hijinks.
Wait a minute. A generation? Probably four generations.
Probably, yeah, at least, yeah. And this summer, Mr. Potato Head pays homage to everyone's favorite knuckleheads with the Three Stooges Mr. Potato Head collector set.
Why, Iota?
What? No Shemp?
No, you know,
wise guy, hey?
Whoa, Larry's the cheese.
Yeah, you know what? There's no. It's only Larry, Curly, and Moe. There's no Curly Joe. There's no Shemp. You know what?
Then I'm not buying it.
Oh, well. There was actually a sixth Stooge. I can't remember his name now, though.
Oh, mosquitoes.
All right. Well, listen, that pretty well does it for the rest of our show.
Oh, it does it, all right.
Okay. Well, listen, we do appreciate you guys listening to our show. And, Walt has something to say.
Well, no, I have to, before we end, or I'll get yelled at by our producer.
Oh, right.
Comic Culture is produced by Anthony Falcone, engineered by James McIntosh. please leave your suggestions on comicbookdaily.com. Hit the podcast for comic culture. At the bottom, you'll see a comments field, and you can just yell at us there, I guess. Right?
Perfect. That sounds great. I couldn't have said it any better myself. Please go out and support your local comic book store, and have yourself a wonderful day.
I'm just happy to be here, guys. Thanks.
Vote James for best flooring installer in the universe.
Oh, boy.
See everyone next week.
And that does it for our show. Thanks a lot.